From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh.
Talking nerdy board game tabletop stuff for the next, let's say the show will probably go for about maybe 2d20 plus your endurance bonus minutes, maybe. Or until the computer cuts us off early. I hate it when that happens. Trent, Mark and Garth on Edge Radio 99.3 FM for another Thursday night. Good evening. Gentlemen, how are we?
Very well, thanks.
Yeah, I'm really good.
What's happening?
Well, this week we are going to, oddly enough, do what we've been playing this week, which is Core Worlds. Then, Trent, you had a little chat with Al Kanes from Senyek Games about his Kickstarter. Mark, do you want to know what that's called, or would you like to shout it from the rooftops?
Not El Luchador Fantastico Grande.
Yeah, that one.
By
the way, really good job fobbing that interview off onto me as well. We were trying to get Garth to do like his, pop his cherry with his first interview, and he's emailed me at the last minute. Go, I've had a really busy weekend. I've been playing frisbee all weekend. And I can't do the interview. Trent, can you jump into it, please? Yeah, nice one.
I got to prioritise.
Clearly.
Exactly.
Clearly.
Now, Trent, you're also going to regale us with some news, I hope, that is interesting.
Oh, there's been, of course. So much happening.
I know. And then we might just sit down and have a chat with each other about what we do when we know we're going to lose a game.
That must come up for you all the time, Trent.
Shut up. I've got quite a bit to say.
I'm sure you have. I'm sure you have.
And it starts with this. And in fact, I feel like I've been waiting my entire life to say this next thing. This is a brand new song from Faith No More.
Whoa!
It's called Superhero. The new album will be called Soul Invictus. The first for 20, 25 years from Faith No More. I'm excited about it because, hey, you know, I'm over the hill, over 40, and that's just the way I roll.
Probably their key demographic.
Thank you. Yes. Edge Radio, 99.3 FM, with The Dice Men Cometh. The other way we roll, of course, is with dice.
Of course.
Or cards, which is what we've been playing lately. Lots and lots of cards in Core Worlds.
Hardcore Worlds, you could say.
Well, it is when we play. We play it with our shirts off. Fat, sweaty guys stinking up the room.
Yeah,
Don't
switch off.
No, not really.
Anyway, let's talk about Core Worlds by Andrew Parks. He's the designer, and it was bought out by Stronghold Games, and it was actually interesting for me when I looked back at this. This was, if you like, the game that sort of brought Stronghold Games to the fore, because they had released a couple of other little games, Code 777 and another similar little sort of code breaky type card game. But this was the big one that came out in 2011.
They're quite a good publisher now.
Yeah, look, yeah. They are... one of the bigger names, that's for sure.
Don't tend to put out crap either.
No, that's right. And this was the thing that sort of started that momentum for them. So 2011 it came out. It plays 2 to 5 players. And it was also one of the first games with the deck building mechanic that did something more than just you bring out cards, you use cards for money, or like Thunderstone, you use cards to attack. The next iteration of deck building
did more than just rip off Dominion.
Yeah, and it came out at a similar time to Martin Wallace's game, A Few Acres of Snow, that also took deck building in a different direction. So this, if you like, was a time when deck building sort of started to be more interesting.
And came out at the same time as another deck builder themed around space civilization's eminent domain.
Oh, yes.
Which, I don't know, I just don't think it's proved to be as popular.
Yeah,
over time.
Well, this one still has some staying power. As we said, 2 to 5 players. Now, they say 90 minutes on the box. I say, bullshit!
What galaxy in minutes is this?
That's right.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we have the base game where you're laying out cards, you're using planets to develop energy, that you then use that energy to buy cards and to invade the planets that are out there. And the premise behind this is you're starting out on the fringes of the galaxy and you're moving in towards the centre of the galaxy, the core, if you may, and eventually you want to attack and take over those core worlds. Now, you know what's happening in the core worlds because on your little scorecard thingy, it tells you what you need to actually attack those core worlds. So you use fleet strength, which, if you like, spaceships, and you use ground strength, which is troops, infantry, vehicles, and they're two different things. Some worlds need fleet strength, some worlds need ground strength, and some need a combination of both. So you're building up this fleet and ground strength by buying cards and then playing cards. You start out, like most deck builders, with a very simple deck of grunts, galactic grunts, which are sort of worth one attack point on the ground, and snub fighters, which are worth one fleet strength in the air, a couple of tactics that let you add a bit of extra, and one hero. And that's all you've got to start with. And then what you're doing is you're getting planets to build more energy, to have more energy to spend, to get more cards, to make your deck more powerful, to attack bigger planets, to get more energy, to get to the end and take the really big planets. That's the core mechanic, do you think?
Yeah, well, energy is your resource.
Yeah.
You know, so you start off small, and rightly so, the planets that you can attack, the worlds, start off with pretty small values, so you can realistically get a couple per turn. You build that up to get that machine, that engine going. I think there's a few differences, you know, this game brings to normal deck builders, but yeah, there's your core mechanics in there.
And the other thing is you have limited actions. So I think at the start you start with 4 actions, partway through you go to 5 actions, the very final round you end up with 6 actions, and it costs you an action and some energy to buy a card out of the middle. It costs you an action and 1 energy to do an invasion, if you like, of a planet. So you've sort of got limited things you can do.
One of the things I like about it is because with all deck builders, there's got to be a way of thinning out your deck. As you put new cards into it, you've got to get rid of those grunts and those basic starfighters. The way Core Worlds does it is when you invade a planet, you can bury any card of your choice on that planet.
And the technical term for that is garrisoning, so I found out in my research.
Right, right. Which is just a nice thematic way of doing of thinning out your deck and getting to the juicy cards that you want.
Yeah, that's right. And, that is a critical thing with any deck builder.
So it's only a matter of time before somebody says that.
Especially when you said burying as well.
It's all those ads on the internet about dick building. I don't know. Anyway, or for our New Zealand friends. Now, Core Worlds has a couple of expansions. Firstly, you've got Galactic Orders. Now, when the Core Worlds came out, most of the cards had these funny little icons. Everyone was like, what are these icons for? And of course it's for an expansion. So when the Galactic Orders expansion came out, it utilized these special icons. So you have tokens that match the icons. When you play a card with that icon on it, you get to put a token on a particular Galactic Orders card.
And some would say that that expansion actually fixed a broken game. Or at least completed it.
Mm. Yeah, and what the designer Andrew Park said about that is that with that Galactic Orders, it enables you to fill in a hole in your strategy. So let's say you're building up your fleet or whatever, but you can play a card, get a token on the Galactic Orders card that lets you have ground strength, for example. So it enables you to do something a little bit extra that you wouldn't otherwise be able to do.
Yeah, look, this game came out in 2011 and the expansion came out very quickly in 2012.
Yeah, 2012,
so,
yeah.
You know, the expansion was there ready to go with the base game.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
I think it adds a really nice touch to it. Mm. It won Best Game Expansion according to the Dice Tower in 2012, and I think that's justified. It really does add a lot to it. Why didn't the game just come with it in the first place? Because I'm pretty sure they just had it all ready to go, clearly with the symbology already on the cards.
Many, many people say that they would never play this game without that expansion. Yes. Now, there was a second expansion called Revolutions that adds advancements. So it's a way of increasing the power, usually of a particular world, lets you do special stuff. Now, you have to pay money to buy these advancements. Our experience when we played that expansion was we hardly ever use them. And again, Andrew Park said it's another way, basically, to fill in a gap in your strategy, which is why it's there. And they don't expect that it'd get used much. But if that's the case, maybe why add it? I don't know. That expansion also added a few extra cards, a few extra event cards, but it didn't add a lot of extra things. Oh, some extra hero tactics.
The hero decks,
which the heroes are quite interesting.
That was probably the main thing we used because, of course, we made the mistake of jumping in and using
everything.
Both expansions in our learning games, which was such a bad mistake. It really was.
So we played two games with both of those expansions in. Now, those games, it would be fair to say, probably went 3.5 hours Maybe the first game even went four.
Say twice at least the recommended playing time or the suggested playing time. I mean, it was, you know, it was very thorough. And the interesting thing about this game is it starts quite quickly.
Mm.
You know, we thought, oh, we're up to turn three or turn four already. Yeah, we can do this. And then we just handbrake time.
Mm.
And the next 2.5 hours, well, it was a slog, wasn't it?
Yeah, and look, I first played this game probably 2012 with just the base game. And I did play two games of it at the Hobart Game Society. And in that case, both those games were the only game that I played in a night. So pretty much they went, you know, three and a half hours as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think the thing is, because it has 10 rounds, there really is no way, without skipping rounds, we'll get to that in a minute, without skipping rounds to make the game shorter. Now, the expansion gives you more to do in the same amount of rounds, but I don't know that it adds a lot more. I mean, there is a bit of power creep, so you've got to have more worlds to get more stuff, to use more power and more energy and more actions to get more stuff. I don't know that it... that they really add anything to me.
I got to say, I was bored to the back teeth with this, frankly. And one of the, I'm trying to figure out what it is that actually bothers me, though. There's very little in the way of player interaction beyond you're first in the turn ahead of me, Garth, so you buy the card that I want and I call you a nasty name.
Exactly right. Or I get the world that you want and you call me a nasty name again.
Exactly. Or, you know, I just call you a nasty name because you got up to the fridge to get a beer and didn't get me one.
Exactly right.
But that lack of player interaction is a feature of a lot of games, certainly, and the thing that this reminds me of is Race for the Galaxy, which is obviously not a deck-building game, but that is a space empire-building card game with very little player interaction, and yet I love it. So I don't know really what it is. I mean, maybe I'm just trying to find excuses for me not to like it.
Although one thing, I guess, thematically, is if we are three different races, three different civilizations, you know, all heading in towards the centre together, it's very unlikely we'd arrive there and go, oh, look, there's someone else there who's coming to attack, you know. Our long-range sensors would be out
there.
That's
fine, Mark, but if you're going to follow that line of logic, then we're all going to have to be turning up in fancy dress and talking foreign languages, so...
Yeah, look,
that might be a fun Friday night for you.
Yeah, it is.
Well, I think we should go back to the beginning and talk about the game we played with just the base game.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I thought that was really cool. I thought that was the purest form of the game. I thought it was really simple. It was a hell of a lot quicker, which was great.
I thought it was mercifully short.
Yeah, which is wonderful, because I think one of the criticisms I certainly have of the game is not that it's poor mechanics or anything. It's just that you could probably take out the middle third.
Yes.
You know, and you could have the first third where you build your deck, and you could go straight into the, let's use my really powerful stuff to get the really powerful planets, and probably have it down to 60 to 90 minutes.
Yeah, that was certainly my experience, is that with those 10 rounds, it takes you two or three to sort of get up and running, and you're right, for the next three or four, it's just rinse and repeat of buy a card, take a world, you know, someone else's turn. And they didn't really add anything. Yes, you need more energy to be able to buy those more powerful cards. But, you know, there was nothing really gained in the gameplay by doing that. I felt like instead of being 10 rounds, it could have easily been 6 or 7, giving you exactly the same game experience in a shorter time, not missed anything at all. I must admit, I didn't miss the Galactic Orders cards. There were a couple of times where I went, oh, damn, if only I had... you know, the token on the such and such card, which gave me an extra power. But, hey, that's it.
Yep. The only other thing I really want to say is I think this would reward a high level of replayability, because if you know the cards, you got it right.
Yes.
But I just think it's trying to be a bit too deep for what ultimately the game is.
Yeah.
A lot of fun, but I would play base game and possibly Galactic Orders, but I certainly wouldn't bother with Revolutions, because those advancements, I got one in three games and
yeah,
I did
me
nothing
as well.
With it.
You should absolutely buy Revolutions if you want to buy this game. No?
No, the other one. Galactic Orders.
Oh, Galactic Orders.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Thank you. So, okay, that's how much attention I was paying. Better still, just buy something else.
Well,
this is
Edge
Radio, 99.3 FM. We're going to talk board gaming news next on The Dice Men Cometh.
Yeah, well, I think that's enough of that. That was two by Motion. You're on Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. It did resemble a motion somewhat. We are the Dice Men Cometh. We're here to talk to you about all things gaming-related and geek-related. But one of the most important things about games is how many of them are coming out and what's happening this week. Trent.
Oh, look, just stuff coming at you all the time. Let's see. To start, nowhere in particular. There is an addition to the Dice Tower Essentials lineup. The Dice Tower Essentials games.
They did Sheriff of Nottingham. That was their first one.
Yep, yep. Yeah. So they're old titles that are sort of getting a dust off and a reprint. This is a two-player abstract game, which is interesting in itself because we don't have a hell of a lot of those. So it's kind of filling a bit of a gap in the market. It's Japanese theme. In fact, it's a Japanese game called Ontinawa. You got five cards. Well, you've got little pawns on grids, and you've got five cards. Each player has two, and there's a fifth one sitting in the middle. The cards tell you how it is you can move. You've got to choose one of the two that you've got and then play that, and that replaces the one that sits in the middle. And, of course, you know, that's the one that's used, and you know, then it sort of proceeds from there. No date or price announced for that one as yet. We'd have an expansion for Castles of Mad King Ludwig.
Awesome.
Which has been a tremendous success over the past few months. This is coming out in October. New rooms, 30 new rooms, in fact, secret passages and swans.
Really?
Swans to collect for money.
Okay.
It's called Secrets.
The royalty used to eat swans? So I guess that could make sense.
You know what? If they didn't, let's start.
I think they did.
Think trading card games are dead?
No.
Card Fight Vanguard released some sales figures of one of their recent boosters, Legion of Dragons and Blades, which they put out in December. That sold nearly 1 million copies.
Wow.
Of just one booster pack.
Wow.
950,000 copies.
Really?
To be
one
exact.
One pack?
One booster pack.
Jeez.
Card Fight Vanguard. There you go.
Can we buy shares? or is that just what we do when we buy packs?
It's cardboard crack. You know what I'm talking about. Stoneblade Games, who gave us the game Ascension. You've played that one?
Yes, yes. And the iOS and Android version is quite excellent.
And Ascension,
one of the better electronic ports very early on, yes.
Yep, so Ascension's sort of winding down now, that particular property. So they're moving in a very, very different direction, releasing a family card game about children eating their vegetables. It's called Bad Beats.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't think that'll work well in my household, I'm just saying.
It'll go over well with the Ascension crowd, that's for sure. Queen Games has signed a distribution deal in the US with the many-tentacled vampire squid that is Asmodee.
Asmodeus!
In other industry news, Greater Than Games has merged with Dice Hate Me Games.
Uh-huh, really?
That actually happened back in February. It just makes them more attractive to Asmodee for an eventual takeover.
Of course.
And Mayfair Games has parted company with noted designer Martin Wallace.
Ooh, yes.
They've had a bit of a public spat. Mayfair Games previously published Martin's titles Steam and Discworld and Toledo and more. Wallace has got his own company as well, Tree Frog Games, and it appears there's been some kind of argument between the two over a particular title called Ships. And it goes something like this. I think Tree Frog Games took some advance orders for Ships, a little bit like a Kickstarter, I suppose. But if you got in early, you could get some kind of deluxe product. And then Mayfair said, we're going to, excuse me, push back the production of this. Martin didn't want to wait, and that caused the ruckus, and there's been a very public split, apparently.
Martin had that one at PAX last year, the prototype. Yeah, that was one of the games he was playing all through PAX.
Ships.
Yeah, it's about galleys and ancient, all sorts of ancient different ships. It's sort of a civilization building game, but with ships as opposed to with civilizations, I think.
He's always working on something because he's one of those few individuals who actually makes it his full-time gig, so he's always got something in the
and,
works.
And I think I read this week that there's also updates on Steam coming as an app as well.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, apparently Mayfair Games are still going to continue to publish those, you know, hit money-making titles.
Oh, yeah. Really?
I wonder if it'll be available on Steam.
We'll find out later on my update.
Osprey Publishing is resurrecting an old title called The King is Dead later this year, which is set in a period following the death of King Arthur, and obviously you're vying for influence to take over the throne. And I'm detecting a little bit of a theme here because AEG Games is also going to be releasing in June Game of Crowns. Guess what that's about? Something a little bit different now from Loan Shark Games. This is actually a YouTube video, which of course is great to talk about on the radio. Loan Shark Games have teased and put out a video for something called Apocrypha, which is some kind of monster-themed RPG card game, which mashup, which just looks really interesting and a little bit sinister. Looking forward to finding out more about that. And speaking of finding out some details, finally we got some details on Pandemic Legacy.
Ah.
Cool.
Right, right. Which, you know, Matt Lecoq has been working on with Rob Davio. This is the game of Pandemic that changes as you play it. You'll be marking up the cards, marking up the board. And there's, I guess, only going to be so many games of it that you'll actually play. So we've got some of the mechanics and how it's going to work. Now, players will have their own character sheets. These will be upgraded with stickers over time. And also, characters will get scarred by their experiences. And three scars and you're out, apparently. Wow. So you can die in this game. Every time there's an outbreak of a particular disease in a city, you'll have to mark a little chart that's on the board next to that city's name. Each chart only has about, I think it's maybe four places on it for outbreaks, and each one of those different outbreaks will have different trigger effects.
Wow.
Causing some kind of cascading problem.
Yeah, well, my understanding is it's sort of like the population is getting more jittery. So it goes from being, oh, well, we're okay, it was just a few people had the flu, to, oh my God, to... let's quarantine them all to brains and then just destruction.
I've been watching 12 Monkeys, the new TV show, based on the movie 12 Monkeys, where a global pandemic wiped out like 12 billion people or something like that. This just sounds like the board game of that.
Exactly.
Oh,
exactly.
Fantastic.
There's this other really interesting little thing he's put in, which is a nice balancing system around government funding. When you start the game, you've got sufficient government funding to add some favourable event cards into the deck. But as you go and you get better, your funding dries up. So you've got to take those cards out of the deck. And then, of course, when things go bad again, you get more funding. So still no date on... actually, no, that's not true. There has been a date announced. I just don't have it written down in front of me. looking ahead to 2016, a re-implementation of a classic, Agricola.
Oh, let me guess. They're going to be some farming in there?
Yui Rosenberg is working on this. He's tweaking the rules. He's getting rid of some dud cards. There's life in this title yet, apparently. It's one of the best regarded of all board games ever, anywhere.
Yeah. It is a great game, and it has a lot of replayability. It is one of those games that does really reward repeat plays to have you get some sense of strategy, that's for sure.
Cash and Guns. The expansion.
Yes.
The Cop. I don't think I have to say anything else.
Yeah, okay.
It's going to be out in time for Gen Con. And my final little bit of board gaming news for us here in Australia, one of our favourite stores in Victoria, Milsims, announced that they are moving from their home...
Suburban Bentley.
In Bentley, out to Boronia. The way out east in Melbourne. And look, guys, Milsims, you can basically forget about me ever visiting your store ever again because I refuse to set foot in Boronia because it's not the end of the earth, but you can see it from there.
Coming from a man who lives in Hobart.
That's exactly right. I actually grew up not that far from Boronia, so I know exactly what it used to be like, at least.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the Boronia boys, and I've seen the Boronia boys in action beating the crap out of people in that place. And look, I'm sure it's really very nice now, but, I mean, Boronia, really? The rent must be cheap, guys. I look forward to dealing with you online.
Exactly. I was about to say, as long as it doesn't impact their ability to post stuff to me, then that's fine.
As long as the postman doesn't get mugged on his way out the door.
It will. I'm. You're not going to get quite the same level of snark when you walk in the shop. That's for sure. There'll be less walk-in customers.
Yeah, well, I think the good thing is they're also having a sale. They're having a relocation sale, so there might be some good bargains to pick up.
That's a lot of boxes that they have to pick up.
Mm.
You know.
Anyway, look, we will be back in a second. We will have the interview where we're going to talk all about... El Luchador El Fantástico Grande!
I'm really looking forward to just playing this and never having to listen to you say that ever
I can't wait
again.
To play it in a Mexican accent. So we're going to come back soon, and when we do, we'll begin again.
Begin again. Segway!
That's what happens when you play a rule wrong. Do you keep going or do you begin again? It's a hard decision to make. That was Purity Ring and their lovely song, Begin Again. I knew you'd hate that one, Trent. You're on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with Mark, Garth and Trent with the Dice Men Cometh.
Now, Mark, did you see our Facebook page this week?
Oh, yes!
There was a wonderful photo because we decided we may as well post one for our 5 weeks of Five Tribes competition. And I put up one of the photos of Doctor Who Risk. And did you see all those Daleks?
There were so many Daleks.
There was. That was cool. So look, I just wanted to give a little reminder to everyone out there that this competition goes till the end of March. All you need to do is send us a video or a photo or some other implement, be it a spoken word piece or a text-based piece or something else of you playing your favourite game. Email us at dicemencometh.com. What was it? dicemencometh@gmail.com.
That's the one.
And what I might do is later on this week is I will post a YouTube video that one person has actually put together. Because we've got a couple of little YouTube videos and I'd just like to put that one out there because it's really quite cool.
Entry's in by the 31st.
It is, by the 31st of March. And so you've only got a couple of weeks to go.
Take as little or as much effort as you want. We just want to get your entries in so you can be in it to win it.
Correct.
Now, speaking of winning it, El Luchador Fantastico Grande is almost finished Kickstarter. Trent spoke to the designer, Al Keynes from Melbourne, this week.
Coming to us from Melbourne, the creator of
El Luchador Fantastico Grande.
Thank you. It's Al Keynes. Al, how are you, mate?
Yeah, not too bad. How are you doing tonight?
All right. Pleasure to talk to you. Just over a week to go in your Kickstarter campaign. You're almost funded. What's the pitch, Al? Get us to hand over our hard-earned dollars. Come on, what's the elevator pitch? Why should we give you money and get you over that threshold?
Sure, this is going to be the best Mexican wrestling card and dice game you'll play this year. That works, right? It's a really fun game. You could probably say either Gateway or Filler. They're both pretty much the same things. It's fast, it's fun, it's furious. And it's modeled around, obviously, Mexican wrestling, so it's got those bright, vibrant, beautiful colours, thanks to my artist, France Cantor, who is absolutely amazing at what he does. And yeah, it's a lot of fun, and it doesn't take a lot of time to play, which I think is where games are kind of gearing towards at the moment as well.
Where did the inspiration come from? Have you always had a love of the luchador lifestyle?
So I grew up in an era where you had, you know, the 80s and 90s wrestling, which was probably the best period of wrestling ever. Now, in saying that, it wasn't until the late 90s where a friend actually brought me back some tapes from America. He brought me back some luchador tapes, and I was like, what is this? This is amazing! Just so much more colourful than the WWF as it was in its time, and now everyone knows it as the WWE. And it wasn't as show pony-ish in that kind of really stupid storyline kind of way. It was more show pony-ish and the moves that they were using and flipping off the ropes and crashing outside the ring and stuff that we would see later on with, you know, the Hardy Boys and kind of Edge and Christian and a lot of those kinds of early WWE mixed wrestlers.
I'm not a wrestling aficionado, but the thing about the whole Mexican side of it that always strikes me is that there's a real hokey charm to it that's somehow much more appealing and dare I say, family-friendly than some of the American stuff, which can be just downright sinister. And, you know, there's like some really bad guys, like your Stone Cold Steve Austins or whatever.
Yeah, look, Mexican wrestling, they were more about fighting for honor. You know, it was all about the masks.
Yeah.
And WWF / E is all about the blood and the violence.
You've captured all of this with fantastic art. What was your artist's name again, sorry?
France Cantor.
Yeah, where did you find this guy from? Because it's amazing artwork.
Fantastic story. I actually met him through a games PR guy called Steve Heller, who runs Pixels for Breakfast and Whiskey and Board Games. I'm myself a video game reviewer. He came across me and the game, and I was like, hey, let me show you this awesome game. And I showed it to him, and he's like, I've got the perfect artist for you, and he loves Mexican wrestling. I'm like, yeah, put us in touch. And then France saw it, and he was like, this is amazing. We have to do this. We have to do it now.
So, Al, you mentioned that you review video games. Where can we see your work?
Sure. Hitandcrits.com. I've been doing that for about 4 years.
And, of course, in recent years, we've had, the rise of tabletop gaming. More and more people from the dark side of video games coming across to our geeky little twee hobby. Are you a recent convert to tabletop gamers yourself, or have you always been involved?
I've always been involved.
Cool.
It all started back when I was about maybe 8, and I had chicken pox. And my brother Ross introduced me to, I think at that time it was Dark Future by Games Workshop, which was the take on Steve Jackson's Car Wars,
and of course
Car Wars.
It does seem, though, that tabletop games, there is more awareness of them amongst video gamers these days. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely, and I think there's actually two reasons for that. So obviously the first reason is because you're having a lot more of those gateway games that are starting to infiltrate the masses. But then the other side of that is you have people like Will Wheaton. And I know how that's going to sound, like, because so many people go, "Oh, Will Wheaton, I hate him." You're wrong. You're absolutely wrong.
The guy's done amazing things for the hobby. He really has.
And it's funny when I hear people complain about it, and then I just sit there and go, "All right, this is why you may not be correct in your judgment of Will Wheaton." Like, as much as you maybe don't like him for some reason, have a look at his stuff, because he really has brought it out to everyone. And it does tie back into video games, because he's done voiceover work for some games, he's done voiceover work for some cartoon shows that everyone loves, and those two things seem to meld together, you know, between video games and anime and stuff like that as well, so...
Now, speaking of small gateway games, there seem to be a lot of these coming out of Australia at the moment. We've got Entropy, Too Many Cinderellas, Goblin Hunters, and your own game, of course. Now, is it just that these small games are easy to kickstart? Is that part of the appeal?
In a way, yes. I think that that's partially true. I think there's a couple of different factors. I know one thing from here, if you speak to any of the Australian designers, simply because we have to manufacture overseas, they'll tell you that, you know, the card games are the way that we're kind of starting to build our reputation, because it's a lot cheaper for us to try and manufacture and send that out than it is, say, a medium-sized board game or a heavy-sized board game. Mm. I think that in the future you will see a lot of products starting to go towards the kind of medium-ish. But those big box games that you see, like Zombicide and stuff, that stuff just simply can't be done here at the moment. It's just way too expensive. I think the other one is that you're seeing Love Letter and stuff like that coming out, and more games coming out of the Asia region, which is shaping what Australia is doing at the moment as well. Just simply because, you know, people are looking towards games that they can get multiple games in. People aren't going to sit around for 3 hours anymore.
Yeah, also I think there's a realization now that length doesn't necessarily equal quality, and you can get a really great fun experience packed into less than an hour.
Exactly. And to expand on that one, people are probably going to tell me that I'm wrong. I cannot handle playing Battlestar Galactica. Oh my goodness. I tried it on the weekend, and number one, Fantasy Flight need to go and reevaluate how they do their rulebooks, because they're horrible.
Oh my dear, yeah, don't even get me
but
started,
number two,
mate.
There's so many mechanisms in it, and you've got to remember so many things, and then by the end you're just going, you know, I just don't want to play anymore. Can we go and get a drink or something? Because this is just destroying me.
Now, I said before that the smaller games are easy to kickstart, but of course this is the second time that you've attempted to. What happened the first time? What went wrong, and how did you reevaluate it when you went back in for the second attempt?
There's a couple of things that I reckon went wrong here. The first one was not having all of the finished art up front. As strange as that may sound, I think that people were kind of looking at it just going, yeah, it's almost done. The other thing was the goal, that 15,000 gold that we needed originally. I think people just looked at it and went, yeah, it's too much for something this small. Which, in a way, they're right. But, I mean, that was the realistic goal because of art costs and stuff like that. Another thing was the how to play video, which was admittedly pretty terrible. working on a small budget, people, it's all I can do. But obviously, as you've seen from the new campaign, we went and redid everything.
Yep.
Made it look more beautiful. We changed up all the videos. Yeah, I think at this time it looks like we're going to pull it off, which is awesome news. But if anyone out there in the internet lands is listening, my one big suggestion to you is this. Don't do the video yourself. Just don't.
No.
Get other people's feedback, but don't go to your other designers for that feedback. As much as I love my other designers, there were a couple of bits of feedback that I took on board, like make the video very formal. And obviously, as you saw from the last video, that made me feel extremely uncomfortable. It's a fun game. It's colorful. The videos need to be vibrant. They need to be fun. And that's where I decided to go with that third video. Going forward, that a lot of people are going to, like a lot of new Kickstarter people are going to be realizing more and more, hang on a second, I'm not just a creator going, hi, this is my game, please back it. You're getting in there and you're going, all right, this is why you need to back it. Hi, this is me. I'm out on the social medias. Talk to me.
Yep. Whether you want to admit it or not, you're competing in a global marketplace and you actually have to get out there and sell it.
And don't be afraid to not fund the first time, because you're not failing people. You're not failing at all. You get a second chance at that. You know, don't let your campaign run to zero. Cancel it before it does because of the SEO, trust me. Yeah, it's like riding a bike in a way, you know. You might not get it the first time, but jump back on, get back out there and make sure you strike while that iron is hot.
Al, what's your take on established companies like a Queen Games using Kickstarter for their projects? Doesn't it crowd the little guys like you out?
It's like you wanted me to rant. it's like you've read a couple of my Facebook posts on this. There's two things here. The first one is the big guys, you can't sit there and say they've got enough money to do XYZ. We don't know that. I mean, their businesses might not have enough money to tap into that market or try something new. The other side of me is going, you've got to have more money than this. Why are you here on Kickstarter? This is supposed to be to get independent projects up and running, not for a big business to come in and do their business and settle in and go, well, boys, break out the cigars. We just hit another $100,000. Woohoo! Recent one, Cryptozoic. It was Ghostbusters, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
I was sitting there and I was like, I know Cryptozoic have enough money to do this. Why are they on Kickstarter? Like, why are they using it as that pre-purchase service rather than, you know, what Kickstarter's intended for?
Well, it's always good to talk to the little guys on a podcast like this one, Al. But for you, will there be more after this if you can get this one over the line? Or even if you don't?
El Luchador Fantastico Grande? Absolutely not the last. This isn't the last you'll see of El Luchador Fantastico Grande either. I'm working on a kind of a standalone add-on to this. So it'll be something you might be able to integrate, but it'll stand on its own as well for sometime probably late next year, maybe, which is going to be based around Day of the Dead.
So you're bringing zombies into it?
No.
No.
There's two things I refuse to do, zombies and Cthulhu.
Okay, hang on, you just said it's based on Day of the Dead, so what?
Ah, Day of the Dead's not just about zombies, it's about death and rebirth and...
Oh, you're talking about the Mexican Day of the Dead, of course! Yes!
Day of the Dead, not yes. Day of the Dead zombies.
Yes, my apologies.
De la muertos.
But for now, the focus is squarely on El Luchador Fantastico Grande. The Kickstarter is up and going. Al Keynes is sitting in his house in Melbourne, checking it every single hour on the hour, sometimes more, to see if we can get it over the threshold and get this damn thing funded. Get on there and support this local creator. Al Keynes, good luck with it, and I hope to talk to you again.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much, Al, for joining us during the week, or joining Trent anyway.
And that is how you do an interview, Garth. Still got your cherry to pop.
I'm still taking notes. Except you took my pen.
We're going to arrange more work for you to do with your mouth.
And on that note, we'll be back in a minute.
That was No Fun by Love of Diagrams. You are with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3. Now, gentlemen, is there a better feeling when you place your final meeple or you roll the dice for the last time and know I've got this game and I've got you guys as well?
I wouldn't know. It so rarely happens. And you know, when the few times I do actually win a game, it's never as good as what I think it's going to be.
You know what I think is even more fun is those games where you don't know how you're going.
Mm.
And I had it just recently in Core Worlds, actually, where I was like, oh, I don't think I've done very well. I think Garth's got this. Dave looks like he's going well. And lo and behold, I won.
Wow.
That for me is really exciting. Because you're seeing the score being tallied up and you're going, maybe, could I? Mm. But I guess the opposite of that is when you're looking at that score track and there's first, second, third and daylight And then you're thinking about, oh my God, am I even in the same universe as the rest of these people? How do you deal with that, Trent? Because, well, it must happen often.
We wanted to, it's a little bit of, it's a question of gaming etiquette, isn't it? Well, I mean, I have to say that when that happens, the main thing that I want to bear in mind is stopping Mark from winning. I've lost count of how many times I have come second to Mark by 1 or 2 points.
Yeah, it does happen a lot.
It's freakish. Freakish. Dungeon Lord, Zulkin, all of these things.
Yeah.
So that's really foremost in my mind. I have to admit.
It's so funny you say that, because I have exactly the opposite strategy. Is if I'm coming last, I've at least got to make sure that I beat Trent.
Okay. Well, but that's, don't you want to do something tough? Well, look, I think, there's a couple of ways you can look at this, because my reaction depends on the type of game we're playing, because a lot of the time we've been playing recently some co-op games like Flashpoint.
Yeah.
And this one is where there's a collective groan around the table where everyone knows we're just screwed.
You spat the dummy. Yeah. you got quite miserable.
Because there's nothing you can do. There's one of these destruction cubes left and it's turn two. The game is just ruthless.
We were playing a Flashpoint map, which is one of the expansions, which is the plane. Mm. And it turns out it's pretty tough to fight a fire on a plane.
Yeah, it's brutal.
The plane's not even airborne or anything.
So I think the reaction we have in a cooperative game is, very, very different to how you play when you're a betrayer, perhaps. You think about Dead of Winter and you think about BSG and a few of those other games where, your strategy just isn't paying off. And my mind just flashed back to Mark being the worst Cylon ever, who was also our captain, I think. And you
Prez Admirable.
Prez Admirable. And you weren't very good, Mark, at hiding your Cylon-ness.
I cannot tell a lie, Garth. I cannot tell a lie.
I think so much of gaming etiquette in general, but perhaps with this in particular, depends on the company that you're in. Mm. Because if you're teaching a game or you're with new people, the last thing you want to be is a smart ass. You're trying to make a good impression, whereas if I'm just hanging out with you losers, then I'll just probably leave the table early, get distracted by the television, eat the last of the dip, or go to the toilet or something,
Well, look, if I'm playing against someone that's not you, Trent, then generally no matter where I am, I'm trying to do my best. And even if I'm coming last, I'll think, oh, if I just try a little bit harder, I might be able to get up to third. And I sort of set that goal. And I think I try to do that as much as I can, unless I'm in a game with you or, another gaming nemesis perhaps, where I just don't want to see them win. I don't want to give them that gratitude.
Yeah, and I think you've got to tip your hat to a lot of games that make that decision really, really hard in terms of how am I going? Yeah. Am I coming first, last, or somewhere in the middle? And I thought our last game of Francis Drake was a really good example of that, I was about 20-odd points behind on the track, but really I was about 30-odd points in front.
There's hidden information in that game, so it's a great thing where you don't know quite how you're going, but maybe you've got a foot up on the competition. But here's the big question. If you're playing something that requires a lot of time, I mean, let's say you're playing something like Twilight Imperium or something like that, and you realize that you're falling way behind, you're not going to catch up, do you bow out? Is it polite? Is it acceptable behavior?
Yeah, I think that's not acceptable behavior. I'd rather you hang in there and finish off, because I've had it happen a couple of times on Board Game Arena where someone pulls out and it's just like there's this dead person there that you're playing with. It just takes away the fun.
But you still get that win, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah, but it doesn't feel the same. Mm. You can't grind a dead person into the dirt. Right. They're already dead.
Okay. So it's the schadenfreude.
That's right. Yeah. Anyway, look, we have run out of time again. We are the Dice Men Cometh. Thank you so much for joining us. Remember our competition, dicemencometh@gmail.com is the email. You've got 2 more weeks till the 31st of March. We want to see more entries. We will see you again next week.
Bye.
Thank you, chaps.
Bye.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.